Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Public Safety Commission meeting for February. I'll do the roll call now. Commissioner Blair?
Here.
Commissioner Long?
Here.
Commissioner Stodgill?
Here.
Commissioner Horde?
Here.
And I'm Chairman Mock. A quorum of the Public Safety Commission is present, and the public meeting of the commission is called to order and will now proceed. The time is 9 o'clock in the morning. The location of this meeting is the Criminal Law Enforcement Auditorium at 6100 Guadalupe, as posted in the agenda. We will now consider the items that have been posted for this meeting. We'll start with an invocation by Chaplain Furman Carpenter. Please rise.
Our most heavenly Father, we are so grateful to be here today. Thank you, Father, for this another time for the Public Safety Commission to meet. Thank you for each one of our commissioners, Father, and for the wonderful job they do, the people of integrity that they are, the way they love our great state. Please be with them as they review the opportunities that we will be looking at today. Thank you, Father, for our good Colonel. Father, thank you for Colonel Martin and for his command staff and every man and woman in the law enforcement agency here at the Department of Public Safety. We ask you to continue to be with them as they seek to serve and to protect and the courtesy that they have. Father, special blessing we ask upon every one of our commissioned officers as they work every day. Father, please watch over them and care for them sometimes as they face the very teeth of death, Father. They go into dangerous areas, Father, but at all times, Father, put a hedge around them and protect them and help them to come home safely. Thank you, Father, for the opportunities that we have to recognize those who've done great things in the department. Have to be a great day and a great reward for the things that they have done. Thank you so much for loving us, and it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you. Now we'll have the pledges by Trooper John Thomas. Thank you. Please be seated. Item 4 on the agenda is approval of minutes of the Public Safety Commission meeting held on December 12, 2024. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Long to approve the minutes of the Public Safety Commission meeting held on December 12, 2024. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. We'll now move on to item 5, presentations, and I will turn it over to Colonel Martin at this point. Colonel.
The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 30 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Additionally, the following personnel are all graduates of Recruit School B94. Katie Conley, Infrastructure Operations Division. Kyle Crane, Criminal Investigations Division. Brian Dismukes, Infrastructure Operations Division. Walt Goodson, Executive Leadership Staff. Floyd Goodwin, Executive Leadership Staff. Joe Madrano, Texas Highway Patrol Division. Robert Mosley, Criminal Investigations Division. Derek Prestridge, Training Operations Division. Maria Guadalupe Rodriguez Solis, Texas Highway Patrol Division. Bradley Sanders, Criminal Investigations Division.
I just want to say we had something really good in the water.
One more.
The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 35 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Ann Clark, Criminal Investigations Division. Regina Kennedy, Driver's License Division. Naomi Neblett, Driver's License Division. Governor William P. Clemens was known for a commitment to excellence in government. The William P. Clemens Excellent Award was created to honor employees who display exceptional performance of duties throughout the course of his or her career at DPS. The following are the 2024 recipients of the award. This employee began his career with the department in 2004 and for the past 12 years has been an integral part of the platform services team within information technology operations solutions and delivery. Throughout his career, he has demonstrated an exemplary ability to collaborate across all areas of DPS and set high standards for teamwork. He routinely steps up during times of transition, filling critical knowledge gaps and assuming additional responsibilities during vacancies. His ability to provide effective solutions to complex problems is unmatched, and he has been a key player in responding to and resolving several major outages that affected DPS operations. During the recent CrowdStrike incident, He was the first to respond, troubleshooting servers and devising a solution with another team member hours ahead of other state agencies. This employee views each challenge as an opportunity to improve services and strengthen customer relationships. His proactive approach, reliability, and deep technical knowledge make him an indispensable asset to the team. In recognition of his exceptional performance of duties throughout the course of his career, Michael Milan is hereby awarded the 2024 William P. Clemens Award. This employee began his career with the department in 1997, working as a Highway Patrol Trooper, Criminal Investigations Division Sergeant, and for the last 16 years as a Texas Ranger before his retirement in 2024. Throughout his career, he has played a pivotal role in many high-profile investigations, including the East Texas church fires, the murder investigation of former Texas Governor Bill Clemens' son, and the murder of a Kaufman County District Attorney and spouse. He directed a team of Rangers in processing of crime scene at the murder site of Chad Littlefield and former Navy SEAL Chris Kyle. He served as lead investigator in the campsite murders and led team in digital crime scene documentation and reconstruction following the mass shooting at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. He served as a member of the Texas Ranger Major Crime Scene Response Team, Texas Rangers Crime Scene Working Group, team lead for the Texas Ranger Company B crime scene team, the officer involved shooting review committee, and the assistant team lead for the Company B UAS program. He has mentored Rangers and local investigators in countless instances and is the go-to resource for his command staff, local prosecutors, agency heads, and Rangers all over the state. He has consistently displayed a commitment to excellence through his work and the development of other officers and Rangers through his mentorship. In recognition of his exceptional performance of duties throughout the course of his career, recently retired Texas Ranger Michael Adcock is hereby awarded the 2024 William P. Clemens Award. Throughout 2024, K-9 Trooper Joshua Perkins has demonstrated dedication and exceptional skills in criminal interdiction. In collaboration with his K-9 partner, Trooper Perkins achieved significant narcotics and currency seizures, totaling 95.6 pounds of cocaine, 1,403 pounds of marijuana THC products, 41.75 pounds of heroin, 2.2 pounds of fentanyl, and $654,945 in U.S. currency. Many of these seizures involve complex concealment techniques, including electronically activated compartments, canister compartments, modified vehicle floors, hidden dash compartments, and modified batteries. Trooper Perkins is also recognized as a department expert in license plate reader systems. This knowledge was instrumental in a high-profile case with the McLennan County Sheriff's Office, where he helped identify a murder suspect by cross-referencing LPR data with the timeline of the incident. With limited information and a blurry image of a suspect vehicle, Trooper Perkins was able to locate the license plate on IH-35. Trooper Perkins has trained officers from multiple departments, including Waco PD and McLennan and Hill County Sheriff's Offices, on maximizing LPR system usage. The collaboration has led to successful interdictions amongst various law enforcement agencies. Furthermore, his expertise prompted the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics to seek his guidance in developing software to improve LPR-based patrol efforts. Trooper Perkins consistently goes beyond his duty, demonstrating resilience, determination, and a commitment to public safety. His work has removed dangerous narcotics from Texas roadways and protected countless lives. In recognition of his dedication and exceptional skills in criminal interdiction, Trooper Joshua Perkins is hereby awarded the Director's Citation. On November 11, 2023, Trooper Justin Reese began following an Austin Police Department patrol unit responding to an emergency situation with lights and siren. As they arrived at an apartment complex, Trooper Reese was informed the call for service was in reference to a family violence assault disturbance. A victim was located in her car talking on the phone. She informed the responding officers that her boyfriend assaulted her by pushing her against a wall, striking her pregnant stomach and injuring her arm. The suspect's name and apartment location were provided. As other APD officers arrived on the scene, contact was made with the suspect as he came to the door holding a six-month-old infant. Officers directed the suspect to hand over the infant, but instead he began choking and squeezing the baby, stating they would have to kill him and the baby. Trooper Reese approached the suspect and tried removing the suspect's hands from around the infant's neck and chest to save her from seriously bodily injury or death. The suspect refused to let go and resisted by attempting to pull away while squeezing the infant tighter. Trooper Reese realized the baby's breathing was being restricted as he could hear her cries going in and out. Trooper Reese grabbed the suspect by the hair and forced his head away from the infant's head. With his left forearm, Trooper Reese shielded the infant's head and with a closed fist struck the suspect in the face three times, knocking him to the ground. APD officers were able to take possession of the infant while Trooper Reese attempted to place the resisting suspect in handcuffs. The suspect was placed under arrest and the infant was transported to a hospital for medical treatment. In recognition of his significant and professional response during a life-threatening situation, Trooper Justin Reese, who has recently promoted to CID Special Agent, is hereby awarded the Director's Citation. On August 1st, 2024, CID Special Agent John Vinson responded to a delayed positive hit on a previously checked license plate connected to a clear alert for a 54-year-old suicidal subject. Agent Vinson contacted CID Special Agents Ross Rigby and Trey Frost and San Antonio Police Detective Jane Ellen Valle to assist with the investigation. The investigation team confirmed the subject was inside the Super 8 motel where the subject's vehicle was located, and they attempted to conduct a welfare check. After no response, the team entered the room and found the subject in the bathtub, unclothed, motionless, and sitting in a pool of blood with significant lacerations in each wrist and elbow crease. The subject was breathing, and the team immediately requested medical assistance while also providing life-saving measures. The subject was uncooperative and resisted medical care, removing the tourniquets from his arms and demanding that they let him die. The team quickly pivoted medical care and utilized towels to apply pressure to the wounds while verbally de-escalating the subject. San Antonio EMS arrived and provided further medical treatment. In recognition of their significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Special Agents John Vinson, Ross Rigby, and Trey Frost are hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award, and Detective Jane Ellen Valle is hereby awarded the Director's Award. On October 16, 2024, Trooper Taylor Buster was on routine patrol in Shelby County when he received radio communication about a house fire with a subject trapped inside. The subject could not exit the home due to the dense smoke and had been advised to get on the floor of a bathroom until first responders arrived. Upon arrival, Trooper Buster, without hesitation, ran through the front door of the residence while the house was fully engulfed in flames. Trooper Buster began giving call-outs but did not hear any responses, so he exited the home and returned to the rear of the house. As he started giving call-outs again, he heard a subject yelling from inside. Trooper Buster kicked the rear door open to access the home and began removing items blocking his path to the subject. Trooper Buster crawled to the subject, grabbed his arm, and removed him from the house with the assistance of a nearby citizen. The subject was treated by EMS and transported to a local hospital for smoke inhalation. In recognition of his significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Taylor Buster is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. On September 5th, 2024, Trooper George Greenway IV was working Operation Lone Star in El Paso when he thought he heard a woman scream. Not seeing anything, Trooper Greenway stepped back into his patrol unit when he received a notification to be on the lookout for a female subject in a nearby canal who had been swept away in the rushing waters. Greenway traveled a short distance to a culvert where he knew others had previously drowned. As he stepped out of his patrol unit, Greenway heard a woman crying. He flashed his light and saw a female subject hanging onto a cable approximately 50 feet away from the culvert. Trooper Greenway could see the subject was about to lose her grip and knew she would not survive if she entered the culvert. Without regard for his safety, Trooper Greenway removed his belt and immediately jumped into the canal, grabbing the cable to reach the female subject. The female subject went limp once Trooper Greenway made his way to her, and he observed injuries to the chest area and a compound fracture of her wrist area. Trooper Greenway wrapped his legs around her and locked his ankles together so he could hold the cable and pull her to safety. Greenway had to release the cable and grab onto a rebar step along the wall. Greenway slowly inched her up the wall to the top of the cement canal and pulled her away from the edge until further help could arrive. National Guard soldiers and medical personnel arrived shortly after and transported the female subject to a local hospital. In recognition of his significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper George Greenway IV is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. On November 13, 2023, Tactical Marine Unit Staff Sergeants Joshua Kelly, Andres Hernandez, Andrew Mitchell, and Florida Wildlife Commission Officer Rebecca Teams were actively working rescue operations at known river crossings in Eagle Pass. Officers were triaging subjects and deploying flotation devices to those who could not swim. During this time, Staff Sergeant Mitchell observed an infant being swept away underwater and not resurfacing. Their patrol vessel was unable to maneuver fast enough to rescue the infant due to the other group of subjects in the water being swept toward them. Sergeant Mitchell removed his duty gear and jumped into the swift water, where he successfully pulled the infant above the water's surface. With the assistance of a personal flotation device, Sergeant Mitchell swam back to land with one arm while holding the infant with his other hand above his head. Once on the riverbank, Mitchell cleared the infant's airway and ensured the infant was out of harm's way. In recognition of his significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Andrew Mitchell is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. On August 23, 2024, Miss Anna Ferguson was at a steakhouse in Austin celebrating the graduation of her nephew, who had just become a Texas State Trooper. After her nephew excused himself to the restroom, Miss Ferguson began to choke on a piece of steak. Her airway became completely blocked and she could not breathe. Corporal Otis Stamps was sitting across from Mrs. Ferguson and saw that she was choking. Stamps advised Trooper Arthur Mitchell, who was sitting close to Ms. Ferguson. Trooper Mitchell immediately performed the Heimlich maneuver three times before dislodging the piece of steak and clearing Ms. Ferguson's airway. In recognition of his significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Arthur Mitchell is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award.
Chief Bill Amen, after 31 years of service, and I can tell you, I'm happy to do this presentation because I don't know if anybody's worked closer with Dale since 2009, and I know we had a career before 2009, but what happened in 2009, we got a new DPS director named Steve McCraw, and he had just a wealth of knowledge and intelligence and counterterrorism, and he did not like the way DPS, at the time it was BIA, I believe, we went through three major transitions in our intelligence world to get to where we're at now with the ICT, intelligence and counterterrorism. But those changes that he made in 2009 have made us the model for the United States as far as intelligence and gathering information and sharing and homeland security, protecting critical infrastructure, threat to lives, all that stuff that comes through the intelligence world. And Dale has been our expert long before he was ever promoted to chief. I know as a major and then as an assistant chief, we brought in some people from the outside, great people. But it was very apparent to me in all the meetings that Dale was a subject matter expert. Fusion Center policy, he represented us at the national level. He was the go-to person in the state of Texas when we're creating regional fusion centers. You fast forward to where we're at today, where we used to work three or four threats to lives a month, and now we have 60 plus. I think now we average 80 a month, so 20 a week, and all that stuff comes through ICT. They're the gatekeepers that gather that information, collect the dots, disseminate that information, and then make sure that it's tracked and make sure it's followed up on. And it may or may not be DPS. It might be a local agency. But somebody's got to own that and make sure that it doesn't fall through the cracks. And Dale has done that. In addition to that, to make it even more difficult, Dale has a whole division of non-commissioned employees that work, for the most part, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. So when something happens on a Friday night and we need information for a meeting with the governor on Saturday morning, we call Dale. And he always gets it done. And if you want to get attacked by the liberal media, give some numbers about a high number of arrests on the border, some migrant-related issue, and they come out of the woodworks. And we are so confident in what Dale has done with ICT in that division that we allow the Texas Tribune to bring in their data people and sit down with our data people and then recreate the numbers that were given at a press conference. And it's just beyond impressive. I can promise you that we weren't even close to that 10 years ago. If we gave a number, I could bet you 100% of the time it was wrong, or we couldn't recreate what we did because it's a snapshot in time. But he's developed a team, and he's the one that is able to articulate how we came to that answer with a bunch of people that don't like the mission to start off with. But at the end of the day, they go through this project that takes several days with a bunch of really smart data people. And we're confident in the numbers, and he has done so much to put the Department of Public Safety. We always look at the Highway Patrol, the Texas Rangers, the commission side. We couldn't do what we do without ICT, hands down. I mean, if we didn't have that intelligence capability, we would be in trouble right now, especially with what's going on in the last 4 years and all the additional stuff, in addition to the terrorism world, intelligence world, all just collecting data on the border and working with the Spurs and the different systems. So I got a lot of confidence in Dale. I hate to see him leave. I know this is very emotional for him, and it is for me a little bit too, because I've been in those tough meetings over the years. In addition to all that, they do threat assessments for Texas, and I can't tell you how many they have done. The gang threat assessment is one that all the CID guys over here are very familiar with. It's a national model that other agencies and federal agencies use. They wait for the end of the year for us to come out with our gang threat assessment and what that looks like. And it's just such an impressive process that they use with all their peer reviews. It's not just DPS. It's gang investigators throughout Texas and the peer reviews and everything. So when it's finished and it's put out, not only is it accurate, all the other agencies that are in agreement with it had buy-in and input, and that's not easy to do. And then in addition to that, mass shootings, it just goes on and on and on. So I've got a stack, I should have brought it this morning, of threat assessments that this team has done in addition to their regular job. So, Dale, you've represented as well. I hate to see you leave. 31 years goes by pretty quick. I guess you came through in 93?
Yes, sir.
But I just can't say enough about Dale and what he's done with the team. And I know you've gotten several awards over the years and your teams, the service awards and stuff like that. But it's just hard to articulate the importance of, we always talk about the non-commissioned people in this agency. This right here is just a perfect example of how they make us successful as an agency. So thank you, HC Go. Wish you the best in the future.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Colonel Jason Taylor is going to present with his retirement.
Hey, you pretty much touched on everything. Dale, you left a lasting legacy of excellence in your division. Here's your retirement credentials, of which I know you wanted to be a couple weeks later, but don't be making any tragic stuff with
this. I promise you.
Ready, 1, 2, 3. Can you all front row actually take one little step this way? Thank you so much. All right, ready, 1, 2, 3.
Well, as I say at every one of these meetings, this is the highlight of the meeting for the commission to be able to recognize this incredible service. Every month demonstrates a very high bar of service, of accomplishment, of true acts of heroism that make this department so great. This month is no different. We thank all those who have been recognized today for their service to the department and the state of Texas, and their families behind them who have made it possible as well. With that, we will take about a 5 or 10 minute break and continue our meeting after the break. So thank you all for being here today.
Okay, everybody, we'll resume our meeting. I want to note our energy saving strategy here of keeping the room as cool as possible. The department is always looking for places to save money, and now that appreciate everybody bundling up a little bit today. We'll move into item six on our agenda, public comment. Sophie, do we have any public comment? Is there anyone in the room wishing to give public comment today? Hearing none, please leave the doors open. Hearing none, public comment is now closed. We'll move on to item seven on our agenda, the director's report, and I'll turn it over to Colonel Martin.
Chairman, Commissioners, we're going to start off this morning with the crash investigation update by our state crash team, Lieutenant Lee.
Good morning.
Thank you, Director. Good morning, Chairman. How are you? So this morning we would like to share.
Will you identify yourselves for the record, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Lieutenant Shelley Lee, and I'm responsible for the state crash reconstruction team. And with me, I have Sergeant Ryan Renfro. He serves with me here at headquarters, and he happened to be the lead investigator on this incident. If it's okay with you, I would like to share an update on Trooper Perot before I actually get into the presentation. So we have some information we received from Major Truitt in Region 2. Trooper Perot was admitted to a rehab facility in the Houston area to be closer to his family in January 17th. When he arrived, he was still sedated and dependent on a ventilator at the time. He was not able to move his limbs with an uncertain prognosis. Over the past couple of weeks, he actually has exceeded expectations in his recovery. They're encouraged by his progress, and they think that his youth is contributing to that, but it's still too early to determine what a final outlook is going to be for him. During the second week of his treatment, they began gradually reducing his anti-anxiety meds and introducing stimulants to try and wake him up a little more. By late week two, he was successfully weaned off of the ventilator, and his tracheotomy was removed on February 6th. He has progressed from tube feeding to actually consuming pureed foods. He is tolerating liquids. He participates in daily occupational, physical, and speech therapy, and he's responding well to that treatment. During his physical therapy, he is now able to actually bear weight on his legs. To improve his alertness, they're still manipulating his medication regimen, and he is receiving sleep aids to help promote rest for his recovery. He still remains nonverbal. He has minimal movement in his left arm, and he is showing improvement in mobility in the right arm. He is tentatively scheduled for discharge from his current facility to move to a post-acute rehab facility in mid-March, but that date remains fluid at the time. And again, the specific facility that he will move to from where he is currently is still not certain, and his long-term recovery outlook still remains also uncertain. The only thing really that we know for sure is it is going to be an extended recovery.
Okay. Thank you for that update. And I know for members of the public listening to our meeting today, there is a GoFundMe the family has set up in case there's anybody who wants to support them during this difficult time. So thank you.
Yes, sir. So we've drawn a little diagram here. We're going to try and walk you through how this crash actually occurred. And let me, before I even get started, let me preface this by telling you it's going to take me far longer to paint this picture than it did to occur. Far longer. I want to go ahead and just plant that seed in your mind now. On December the 16th, Trooper Perot responded to reports of a crash on the Dallas North Tollway. And as you can see from our photo there, we have a crash vehicle that is in what we will call lane number one near the center divider. There are four lanes open there and a shoulder. Okay. So we have the crash vehicle, which is unattended, in lane one, and an RSS truck with the right arrow flashing, blocking lane one. When Trooper Perot arrives, there's another vehicle on the shoulder slightly ahead of that parked vehicle, so Trooper Perot parks behind that vehicle on the shoulder and exits his car to speak with a pedestrian, which happened to be the operator of that vehicle that you see there. That gentleman happened to be an off-duty security officer, and we believe he's the person who called in the crash. He was not involved. You'll notice the times Trooper Perot arrived on scene at 12:39 and 39 seconds, and he exited his unit at 12:40 and 2 seconds. So there's a second RSS truck. If you'll notice, this area where the crash occurred is a very sweeping, aggressive curve on the toll road. So we have a second RSS arrow truck behind the curve in more of a straightaway, also with a right arrow. We're uncertain exactly what time they arrived, but all the video evidence that we've been able to obtain, it appears as if they're maybe already there when Austin gets there or shortly after, okay? The Dallas Fire and Rescue fire engine begins approaching the crash area at 12:40:21. Okay, that's about 18 seconds after Trooper Rowe has exited his vehicle. This is a snapshot of a camera on the toll road that's looking towards the crash scene. That is the Dallas Fire and Rescue fire engine approaching the crash scene. That's the second RSS truck I just showed you that's on the downstream side of the curb. And up at the very top corner of that photo, you can barely see the first RSS truck that's protecting the crash. You can't see the crash scene from this camera view. It's just slightly off view of this camera. Okay. About 43 seconds after Trooper Perot exits his vehicle, Dallas Fire and Rescue approaches the first RSS truck and begins to protect lane 2 and 3. So now we have lane 1, 2, and 3 occupied. The only thing open for travel is lane 4. Okay, Trooper Perot is on the shoulder. Our suspect vehicle, or the yellow Mini Cooper that you see in the drawing here, begins approaching the crash scene at 12:40 and 53 seconds. That's about 8 seconds after the fire and rescue truck becomes stationary initially. Yes, sir. So we do have data from that car, from the airbag control module, so we have some reliable information. We know that he was traveling about 67 miles per hour when he passed that first RSS vehicle. You can see from the photo there, as he's passing that first vehicle, he's doing about 67 miles an hour, and he is in the lane next to them, okay? The Mini Cooper driver signaled his intent to move to the right at 12:40:58, and he's about 420 to 450 feet away from his initial impact, which is going to occur with the concrete dividing wall to the right where the shoulder is when that occurs. This is a photo depicting where he is, and you can see him right up there. He's the first car in the curve. And he is beginning to put his turn signal on. You see how close he is to the fire engine. Dallas Fire and Rescue begin moving to the right to reposition to protect Trooper Perot and better adjust to protect this scene at 12:40:59. The Mini Cooper driver moved to lane 3 and begins braking in response to DFR moving at 12:41. And we're about 250 feet away from impact with the concrete wall when this occurs. There's your depiction of where the Mini Cooper is when the fire truck begins moving. You can see he's much closer to the area. Is this the video? Okay. So before she hits play, this is going to just kind of show you what I just walked you through, what I talked you through. You're not going to see the crash. You're just going to see the fire truck come and get into place. And then in about 8 seconds later, you'll see the yellow Mini Cooper come, turn a signal on, and you'll see both of them begin moving together. Go ahead. There comes your Mini Cooper. He's in lane number two. And now they are moving together. At this time, I'm going to let Sergeant Ryan Renfro kind of walk you through this diagram. Ryan did quite a bit of work analyzing the CDR data from that Mini Cooper, and he'll give you an excellent explanation of the last few points of impact here.
Good morning. So we were able to gather quite a bit of data from the airbag control module out of this Mini Cooper to where we could place it back in time at key locations, including when it started braking and all that. So this is a depiction of the approximate location as it's traveling northbound on the Dallas North Tollway. So in this snapshot, we have the approximate location during the braking that we have a couple of vehicles as they're flying the scene that weren't there at the time of the crash. But when they were flying the scene utilizing a drone, they were there. So I just put in what was not there. So when this Mini Cooper starts braking, it's traveling approximately 67 miles per hour. It's about 250 feet back from initial impact with the wall and about 218 feet back from where the fire truck is when the fire truck starts moving. As it's moving over to the right, as the fire truck's also moving over and it gets closer to the wall, obviously with braking, it's decreasing its speed. There is active steering to the right. Impact with the wall occurs at 42 miles per hour. As he's riding the wall, it's essentially a glancing blow. It's not a frontal impact. It's just along the right side of that Mini Cooper. Runs the wall for 23 feet, decreases its speed to 40 miles an hour as it comes off of that wall, and then approaches where Trooper Perot and the off-duty security guard are standing on the improved shoulder behind Trooper Perot's Tahoe. So this is our area of impact with vehicles placed back into that scene. So the Mini Cooper is traveling approximately 30 miles per hour when it strikes Trooper Perot and the off-duty security officer based on that CDR data. And then approximately 0.2 of a second later strikes Trooper Perot's Tahoe at 27 miles an hour. The impact with Trooper Perot was a forward projection. It put him 61 feet from where approximately he was standing to where he impacted with the roadway. And then the final rest of both vehicles are depicted in this diagram as well as Trooper Perot's final rest.
So some final thoughts to share with you on this reconstruction. To bring you back to the timing of this crash, the Mini Cooper arrives and begins moving and braking to the right a minute and 21 seconds after Austin gets there and starts getting out of his vehicle. This whole thing is done a minute and 25 and a half seconds after he arrives. So the sequence of events was very, very rapidly evolving while our public safety personnel are trying to establish TIMS procedures to protect this crash scene. It just happened so quickly. We do have evidence that the driver of the Mini Cooper was not on the cell phone at the time of this crash. He did self-admit to smoking a marijuana vape earlier in the day, and he did, in fact, test positive for Delta-9 THC. The problem with that is there's no illegal per se limit of that in Texas. And his appearance during his interview and on camera, it's very difficult to say he appears impaired or intoxicated during his interview. And our most complicating issue in this occurrence is the movement of the fire truck, which sets this entire thing in motion. One thing that I did want to mention, I forgot to mention to you during the update, Dr. Ascott, who works very closely with Ren Neely and our JMO unit, they do a fantastic job ensuring that our employees get admitted into the best care facilities in the Texas, and they did the same with Austin, ensuring that he got admitted into some of the best care facilities in Houston where he could be near his family. But they are instrumental when things like this happen in taking care of our personnel. Are there any questions at this time?
I'm wondering, could the RSS truck, the first one, have been a little bit further back to signal that? Because it seems like they're coming around a pretty blind corner, and then all of a sudden they have, you know, this get over, slow down all at once on a wet surface. Would that have made a difference? Or, I mean, could it have made a difference?
I'm sure that it could have. The issue with a lot of times when you have limited public safety personnel and vehicles like that is you set him further back, and then they can't see around the curb to see the second set. They think that it's okay just to move back into lane one, and then you reset the same scenario over again for a new set of people. So I'm not certain that would have helped or prevented anything. It would be difficult to say.
Commissioners, any questions?
A couple things I want to say on this. First of all, to Chief Rippey out there and the leadership, I was up there the next morning after this happened and got to see the support of the Highway Patrol and how they rallied around not only the trooper, but also his family, as they were moving up from South Texas and everything. And I know that happens. I know that it happens. It's just, but I just want to say it was an outpouring of support. It was touch and go there for a while, whether, you know, what was going to happen. And I just wanted to, Chief, if you didn't know about it, just know that the North Texas troopers and support staff, I know they assigned somebody 24/7 to be there, and then there was probably no less than 25 troopers up there that next morning in support. The question I wanted to ask about, following up on Chairman Mock's, I'd heard some, and it's almost unavoidable, they call it what, the funnel of death or something like that, when things kind of just go down. But there's really nothing. It just happens sometimes, right? All this is happening. You probably talked longer than it took for all this to happen by far. And this just sequence of events happens sometimes. So I guess, is there anything at all to be learned about this? Could the trooper have done anything differently as he was stopping? Yeah.
You know, we have discussed that actually at length amongst ourselves, and it's just an unfortunate setup, because this routinely happens, especially on busy freeways like this. You may have two vehicles involved, and one manages to make it to the right shoulder, and the other is crippled, you know, in the fast lane, in lane number one, and the first arriving personnel don't know which direction to go. And it, you know, this unfolded and happened so quickly. I'm not sure how you correct the issue.
Yeah.
Honestly, because, you know, Trooper Perot went to what he most likely thought was a second unit involved in this crash, because he saw someone standing outside that vehicle. You know, that would be the logical place to stop and get out and check. And again, this all unfolded less than a minute and a half after he got there. So, you know, I'm not sure how we correct it.
Well, thank you very much. I can tell the emotion there about one of your fellow troopers. It's good to hear. I know that he was moved down there in January. It's good to hear that there is some progress being made. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Director. Do you have Colonel, do you have anything to add?
I would just say that, you know, we're very proud of our crash team. They are the experts in Texas, do a phenomenal job. And we do an after action on not just crashes, but and injuries to our troopers, but every pursuit, you know, every critical incident, we do an after action and what could we do better and how do we make improvements? And then there's just certain things that there's so many things we've done in the last 10 years with all SUV fleet and things like that. And then there's just things that are out of your control. And this is one of those things that happened. It was a sequence of events that lined up exactly wrong for this to take place. You mentioned the GoFundMe account. There's a lot of organizations, you know, the Houston Hunter Club is the model of what right looks like in taking care of employees when they're seriously injured or death. But the death benefits way outweigh the critical injuries. And we've seen with Moises Sanchez, we've seen with several of our employees that they survive for a year or two. And it's just devastating to the family because they don't get the same benefits, the death benefits that kick in if an employee dies in the line of duty. And so the GoFundMe is critically important. Of course, who runs the GoFundMe account? A lot of that is out of our control. And then what can we do with state resources in advocating for people to donate funds when we're not, you know, we can't control that. It's a family member. And so you're taking a risk, but it's something that we're working with the Houston 100 Club and other organizations to what more can we do for employees that survive. And Moises Sanchez, you know, 2 years before he passed away, it's an impact on the family that some of them can never recover from. So that's something that we're looking at. And of course we do everything we can to mitigate the risk and some lessons learned from this one. That's all I have, but we're proud of the crash team, the work that they do.
Can you remind me his age? 29?
I was his recruit school counselor. He was in the A21 recruit school, and he's very young. I don't even think he's in his 30s yet. If he is, it's very, very early in his 30s.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman, Commissioners, thank you for letting us be here.
Chairman, Commissioners, the last thing I have is an update on Operation Lone Star. And it'll be a quick update. There's a lot of unknowns right now. At our last meeting, we talked about some of the successes of Operation Lone Star. And one of the big successes was the shift in illegal migration west. We went from 70 to 80% of the illegal migration in Texas. And then because of the actions of the governor, the state leadership, the Texas legislature, and Operation Lone Star, we saw that shift to where we're only getting 25 to 30%. There's not just one factor, but it's really the Texas approach that we took. The legislature created new statutes. They increased penalties. We enforced state statutes all along the border, the corridors. The governor did cash rewards for stash house operations. It was just a whole spectrum, whole of Texas approach. And now a lot of other states that we see are in legislative session right now, and they're passing similar legislation and following the Texas model. Even New Mexico is looking at smuggling statutes. So just a complete shift. With the change in federal administration and the immediate change in policy, we saw a dramatic reduction in illegal migration across the entire Southwest border. So just some quick numbers. In 2024, there was about 4,492 on February 12th of 2024. So yesterday, February 12th, 2025, we had 286. So we went from 4,500 to 286. That's the entire Southwest border. So the average for the last week has been less than 200 in Texas. So the numbers are just extremely low. And that's allowed Border Patrol to get out of the processing centers and actually patrol. That being said, we're still Texas DPS is arresting 70 to 100 people on the border for criminal offenses per week right now. So we're still making drug seizures. We're still getting stash houses. What you're not seeing is large groups of people crossing and seeking asylum, which overwhelms the resources and allows criminal activity between the point of entries. So just a huge shift in numbers just based on the policy. And I would say one of the biggest things was ending the catch and release. When you interview the migrants, if they know they're going to be processed and released, they're going to continue to come. But they're not going to sell their everything they own, take their life savings, pay smugglers to get to Texas and then be deported or be apprehended and have to remain in Mexico or whatever the case may be. So that brings us to, you know, where are we at today? There's a lot of discussions right now going on in the legislature and with the federal government. For us, it's really about criminal migrants, gangs, drugs, and organized crime and national security. And that's here to stay. So Texas DPS, we can't pack up and go home. There's plenty of work to do. And I think you saw a presentation here recently on the organized crime front. And that was really one aspect, because you look at retail theft, identity theft, oil field theft, organized crime is just has never been higher. And then the market is flooded with drugs. In Texas, the drug of choice, you talked to all of our sheriffs and police chiefs, is methamphetamine. And then the number one leading cause of death from 18 to 45-year-olds is fentanyl. And so when we talk about Operation Lone Star, you get a lot of questions about return on investment. I mean, that's not for us to determine. But we can tell you how many lives, it'll never be known how many lives were saved by Operation Lone Star. And you see here every day, I mean, at every commission meeting, we're giving life-saving awards for legs that were amputated, for migrants that fell on the train, or drowning victims. But we don't even talk about the stash house operations or the commercial vehicle operations where migrants were recovered, really rescued from those operations. In addition to 63 tons of methamphetamine, 624 million lethal doses of fentanyl, $72 million in cash currency, you know, 13,000 firearms. You know, without a doubt, you know, Texas and the United States is safer because of the actions of our officers and agents and Border Patrol partners and Parks and Wildlife that contributed to these numbers. Moving forward, there's a lot of questions about what the federal government is going to do. These mass deportations, we can tell you that in our operations, working with our federal partners in Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and throughout Texas, is we've already done a lot of the work looking at criminal aliens, looking at every migrant that was here illegally, that was booked into jail in the last 4 years, what types of crimes were committed. Our analysts, and we're just, you know, bragging on Dale Avant, but his team has done a ton of work in identifying the worst of the worst and who needs to be targeted. So we came up with a list of 5,400 migrants that were here illegally, that were booked into Texas jails, that are now out of jail, that have felony warrants, and then prioritize those on murders, rapes, robberies, a bunch of sex offenses involved in children, trafficking cases. And so that we had already created a program to look for them. So we're, in addition to teaming up with the federal government in their operations, we've shared that list with each region and working with HSI and ICE, ERO, and they've teamed up with the U.S. Marshals, DEA, FBI, and ATF, along with our CID agents to go after them. So that's the priority right now. And I can't answer for the federal government, but I can tell you there's a lot of social media and a lot of chatter out there about them going to schools and churches. And we've had a lot of calls and questions, and there's a lot of angst, you know, and some pastors will tell you that people are scared to go to church because they're scared they're going to be apprehended. I can tell you that hasn't happened anywhere in the United States, and it's just chatter. And listening to the Border Patrol chief the other day, there's no plan to do that. There's a lot of work to be done, and nobody is, you know, is focused on schools or churches. Right now we're going after the migrants that pose the largest threat to the communities, and there's a lot of them. So that's what we're focused on right now. We continue to work the corridors. As the border becomes more and more secure and the numbers are less, you're going to see an increase in violence, and we're already starting to see that. And you're going to see an increase in it's going to cost more to be smuggled into the United States. And there's going to be less large groups, and there's going to be more individuals trying to get it through these ranches. And so Operation Drawbridge, our aircraft, our Marine unit, and our brush teams are probably more important now than they were a few months ago.
Having gone through quite a bit of the cycle as being on the commission, I think back to 2014, 15, 16, and how we were responding in those days to this. And it sounds, to your point, like it's coming back full circle, that what we were doing a year ago is going to change back to what we had been doing 5-10 years ago. But it's as important as ever. It was the whole goal is that everybody across the state should feel safe sitting out on their front porch, regardless of where they are in the state. It wasn't just, for certain parts of the state, it's for everyone. And that was a real important point of what we were doing with Drawbridge and some of the earlier surge operations. And so I think there's a lot of lessons that have been learned, and I think we're in really great position to capitalize on that going forward.
Yes, sir. And the market has been flooded with drugs. The methamphetamine in Texas is pure, it's cheap, and it's everywhere. The good thing is, with some of the steps the federal government is currently taking, is going to make it a lot harder to smuggle that. With technology, there's technology out there that they're looking at now that will drastically increase our productivity, and especially at the point of entries and between the point of entries. And I've been in constant communication with our federal partners on some of the stuff that we've looked at and stuff that they're looking at. The buoy barriers are a good example. I'm really talking about surveillance technology, but the buoy barriers, in a conversation with the federal government just in the last couple of days, they love the idea. And they're going to make a large investment and take over the buoy barrier operations in Texas, which is going to be a huge benefit to us. Yeah. But that concludes a brief. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? Okay, well, thank you, Colonel, for that report. Before we move on to new business, I want to recognize some of our special guests here today. We have Scott McNaughton from the governor's office, Suzanne Tomlin from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's office, and Shelby Sterling from Senator Brian Birdwell's office. We thank you all for being here, and I apologize if I've missed anybody. moving on to item 8 on the agenda, new business. Item A, report discussion and possible action regarding an update to the Chief Auditor's Office Charter. And I'll turn it over to our Chief Auditor, Catherine Melvin.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, Catherine Melvin, Chief Auditor. This morning I have an administrative item for you. I'm proposing for your approval an updated audit charter for the Chief Auditor's Office. Our charter was last signed in February 2019. A copy of the proposed update should be in your packets. The Texas Internal Auditing Act, which sets forward requirements for state agency internal audit functions, requires that we follow two sets of standards. And one of those standards recently went through a pretty significant revision. And so that revision necessitates that we go into our charter and make some updates to ensure that we're aligned with that new language. And then in addition, we have an updated signature to replace Colonel McCraw's with Colonel Martin's signature. And with that, this is an action item. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
Do you have any comments in particular about it? Then I would entertain a motion to approve the update to the charter of the Chief Auditor's Office.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Hoard to update the Chief Auditor's Office Charter as presented in our materials for this meeting. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item B under new business, discussion and possible action on the appointment of members to the Private Security Advisory Committee, and I'll turn that over to Chief Wayne Mueller.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. Wayne Muller, Chief Regulatory Services Division. Under Chapter 1702, the Occupations Code, which is the private security chapter for the state, it's the responsibility of the Public Safety Commission to appoint the members of the Private Security Advisory Committee. It is a seven-member committee. Four members are made up of representation within the industry, private investigators, security alarm systems, security guards, and locksmiths. And then the other three roles are public member slots. We have a couple of vacancies, and so today I have two recommendations for you to fill those vacancies. The first vacancy is to fill the seat for representation of security guards. That was recently made vacant by the resignation of Mr. Tucker Witt. He has divested himself of involvement in the industry and saw fit to step down from the advisory committee. We wish him well in his future endeavors. In his place, we had two applications of interest for this slot. At this time, I'm going to recommend to you Mr. Louis Fellini. He is co-founder and co-owner of Tier 1 Holdings, which is a licensed security guard company with us here in the state. He has been in that role as principal since 2018, but prior to that, graduate of Tarleton State with a criminal justice degree and 29 years in law enforcement, including a 28-year distinguished career with the Dallas Police Department. There was a background check conducted on Mr. Fellini. There was nothing found that would indicate any kind of concern with him being involved with the Private Security Advisory Committee. The other recommendation is for Mr. Wade Hayden. In public member slot, Mr. Hayden is in that slot currently. However, his term has now expired, and so this would be a recommendation for reappointment. Mr. Hayden is an attorney here in the state. He's the principal of a small firm in the San Antonio area, graduate of St. Mary's Law School. He was a member of the Private Security Board as that was in place, appointed in 2013. That was abolished by the legislature and reconstituted as the Private Security Advisory Committee in the Sunset Bill in 2019, at which time this commission appointed him to the advisory committee. He has indicated interest to continuing on in this capacity, and by all accounts, he is a vocal and contributory member of the advisory committee. And so at this time, Chairman, I do recommend the appointment of Mr. Louis Carl Fellini into the security guard slot on the advisory committee, as well as the reappointment of Mr. Doyle Wade Hayden into the public member slot, both to serve six-year terms that would expire in January 2031.
Did you say Mr. Hayden's first name is Roy?
Doyle Wade
Hayden. Doyle, okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions. Okay.
Any questions, commissioners? If not, I would entertain a motion to appoint Mr. Louis Fellini as the representative for security guard companies to the Private Security Advisory Committee, as well as Mr. Doyle Wade Hayden to be reappointed as the public member of the Private Security Advisory Committee.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to appoint Mr. Louis Fellini and reappoint Mr. Doyle Wade Hayden to the Private Security Board, Private Security Advisory Committee. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. Item C under new business, final determination in contested cases for consideration and possible actions on proposals for decision. And I'll turn it over to General Counsel Phil Atkins.
Good morning, Phil Atkins, General Counsel. You have four contested cases on your docket this morning for final determination. Four of them are private security cases that involve disqualifying offenses, and then two of them are vehicle inspection cases related to fraudulent emissions testing. Your first case, the department denied the application for a commissioned security officer license to Ronald Maurice West based upon a disqualifying conviction of aggravated robbery. Hearing was held and the ALJ recommended denial of the application. Second case relates to the application of Lathan Pulse for a commissioned security officer license, disqualified based upon a disqualifying conviction for felon possession of a controlled substance. Hearing was held and the ALJ recommended denial of the application. Third case, Stephen Sinclair Johnson, also application for a non-commissioned and commissioned security officer license, two disqualifying criminal convictions, including aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. The fourth case, Aletha Ann Robertson's application for non-commissioned security officer license was denied based upon disqualifying criminal conviction, endangering the welfare of a minor. And then the two vehicle inspection cases, Chim Tire and Auto Service, seeking to revoke their inspection certification based upon fraudulent emission testing or clean scanning. And the final case is to revoke the vehicle inspection station certificate of Quick Auto Sales and Repairs based upon fraudulent emission testing. In each of these cases, the ALJ agreed with the proposal of the department, and I would ask that you adopt the decision of the administrative law judge as the final determination of the commission in each of the six cases on the docket.
I have a question on that. As we look at these changes to the vehicle inspection program, do you anticipate that most of these will be limited to vehicle emissions testing violations going forward?
That's right.
Yeah.
And okay. Unless there's, don't see any reason why there wouldn't be, unless there's some old case in the pipeline, but we probably wouldn't need to go forward with that. So,
yeah, I guess that was maybe more my question. Are we going to adjudicate things that really are sort of moot? But I guess if it's for something else and they still have a vehicle emissions license.
It could be something where the prior violation enhances a subsequent violation. So it might be important to look at it, but I don't foresee a lot of that.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions? If not, I'll ask for a motion to approve the proposals for decision as presented in today's posted agenda.
Yes, Commissioner Long, I'll make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Long, a second from Commissioner Hoard to adopt all proposals for decision under Section 8C, items 1 through 6 of our today's posted agenda. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to item D under new business, intelligence threat briefing. We'll discuss that in executive session. Moving on to 9, ongoing business. Section A, report, discussion, and possible adoption of the following previously published rules. Items 1 and 2 will be Chief Sherry Gibson from Driver's License.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sherry.
Sherry Gibson, Chief of Driver License Division. We have two amendments that were proposed and posted in the Texas Register. The first is 37 TAC Section 1531, which removed the ability to issue a DLR ID without any type of photograph and expanded the ability for commercial driver licenses to be issued while out of state as long as they did not have a hazardous material endorsement. The second one is 37 TAC 15, Section 15.62, which clarified the naming conventions for the Impact Texas course, which is a distracted driving course that's required prior to taking the driving skills exams. Both of these were posted and no comments were received on either one, so we're requesting adoption.
Commissioners, any questions for Chief Gibson? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the previously published rules under Section 9A, ongoing business numbers 1 and 2, proposed amendments to 37 TAC Section 15.31 and 15.62.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Hoard to adopt the proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 15.31 and 15.62 as listed in section 9A of our ongoing business agenda. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. Item B, report, discussion, and possible action regarding the modification of the DPS organizational structure and the appointment, promotion, ratification, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a member of the department or commission management team. Colonel Martin, do you have anything for us?
Chairman, Commissioners, we have one item that requires your advice and consent, and it's in the Infrastructure Operations Division. We previously had a chief and assistant chief that we eliminated that position in Human Resources, was its own division. We rolled that under the Infrastructure Operations Division, and we've had a major there serving as the HR director for the last, at least the last year and a half. At this time, we recommend promoting Brian Dismukes. His title would go from being a major in the Infrastructure Operations Division to an assistant chief over personnel services, or personnel and employee services in the Infrastructure Operation Division. And he would oversee HR, victim and employee services, DRO, and divisional support operations.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve Brian Dismukes as the Assistant Chief of Personnel and Employee Services in the Infrastructure Operations Division.
So moved.
I'll second.
A motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Long to approve the appointment of Brian Dismukes as the Assistant Chief of Personnel and Employee Services at the Infrastructure Operations Division. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Brian, are you here today?
Brian.
Congratulations. Okay. Any others?
That's it. That's the only recommendation.
Okay. Final item C under ongoing business, the report, discussion, and possible action regarding ongoing criminal investigations pursuant to Government Code Section 411.0041. We will handle that in executive session. Moving on to Section 10 of the agenda, reports. Any members of the Commission wishing to give a report? Hearing none, moving on to the finance report. Chief Whittington, any report today? Item C, Chief Auditor's report. Anything in addition to the charter amendment? Okay. Item D, division reports. Any division chiefs wishing to give a report today? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 11 on the agenda, consent items. Lieutenant Colonel Taylor, do you have anything for us? Or anything to change from
the Chairman, Commissioner, there's no changes to the listed items. I do have an alibi on the presentation by our crash team sergeant or lieutenant. Trooper Austin Parrott is 30 years of age. He previously served in the U.S. Army and with the Matagorda County Sheriff's Office. So 30 years old.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We will take all the consent items together if I have a motion to do so.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Long, I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Long to approve all items listed under Section 11, the consent items on our agenda. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Item 12, items for future agenda. Commissioners, if you have anything to include in a future agenda for our next meeting, please speak with Phil Atkins or Sophie, and we'll get that included. Item 13 on the agenda, the discharge hearings will be scheduled for April the 10th of 2025, and the regular Public Safety Commission meeting is scheduled for April 11th, 2025. The Public Safety Commission will now go into closed session at this time. pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, to consider matters authorized to be considered in executive session under Government Code Section 551.071, 072, 073, 074, 076, and Government Code Section 411.0041. The time is 10:43 in the morning. All right, the Public Safety Commission has ended. The closed session is now reconvened as a quorum and open session. The time is 12:38 p.m. If there's no further business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Oh, that's a motion by Blair and a second by Satchel. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.